True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
At Graybar, we know your time is money. That's why our services go beyond parts and products. With kitting, pre-assembly, wire carts, and Graybar smart reels that keep you moving. We stage materials and manage logistics so you can spend less time sorting and more time installing. And with locations nationwide, we deliver when and where you need it, working to make your job easier every step of the way. Yep, Graybar does that.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Podcasting from the top of the rocks. This is News on the Rocks with Patty Steele.
So for News on the Rocks today, I first of all am drinking some blueberry vodka on the rocks. I have to be on the rocks, right? And unfortunately, Brad Blanks, you're not here with me, so here's a virtual toast to you.
And cheers, Patty. Yes, and yeah. Thanks for having me on your great show. And I'm having a cup of coffee, and I know I've let you down, and I know you have a low opinion of my hard liquor drinking.
Yeah, you're a puss.
Yeah, yes, right.
And, major puss when it comes to
I'm a beer drinker, and it's something I've still got to mature or evolve as a man into my hard liquor drinking. And we'll do that together, and you know, it'd be good to watch a documentary with you or something and drink hard liquor.
Oh, boy, that'd be fun.
Yes, it would, because no, there is a glowing sensation, and but it comes back to patience. So when I drink my beers, I drink them quickly. And
You do everything that way.
That's right. It's not
your
a
poor wife.
Yeah, I know, the poor darling. Yeah. So I've got to learn to relax. That's the next stage of my life, just to take my time, you know, look at sunsets instead of sort of rushing to get to a sunset and then not even looking at it. There you go.
Right, or trying to take a bunch of pictures of it and then
right, that's right.
And then it's over and you're
so
like
I will it's dry January, so February 1st when I get back on the drinks, okay. I will try to get better for you.
Yeah. Well, very soon, because yeah. We're into the last week of January.
That's right. So. Yeah. Amazing.
So the main reason I really wanted to hook up, I don't know if I should say that, hook up with you today is because I love the fact, and I want to start from the beginning. I love the fact that you went to Washington for the inauguration when everybody, first of all, was telling you, including me, no, it's not a good idea. We don't know what's going to happen to you. It's going to be crazy. And tell me, what was the turning point for you that made you go?
So I always love the inauguration. So I always want to be there. It's a big event, and we've all been locked down for nine to 10 months. Mm-hmm. But this, it was actually very late. It was a late call for me. It was a few days beforehand, you know, 48 hours beforehand. My son, my 11-year-old son, Harvey, said, Dad, you know, you love being on the scene of big events. It's what you've built your career around, you know, the Olympics, the Oscars, mm-hmm. World Cup soccer, big events. And you go there and you actually talk about what the people are doing. And Harvey said, go there, you'll be fine. Worst case scenario is there's something could go wrong, but you'll be in your hotel room anyway watching it. It's not as though you can watch it, but at least when you do your reports, you'll have walked around, you'll have talked to people, you'll have talked to the National Guard. This is coming from my 11-year-old. You'll have gone around and felt a part of it. And then when you do your reports back to radio stations in Australia and back with you and Scott on CBS FM and, you know, on various other outlets, you'll be telling the truth. And yeah. Then, and this is my son, he goes, you'll be telling the truth and you'll feel better about your reports. And then, Dad, who cares? Just sit in your room. He goes, when you're not doing that, sit in your room and watch Netflix. Have fun, man.
I love him. Kind of like when you went and covered the world's biggest pumpkin contest. If you had just said, oh, I'm here on the scene, we wouldn't have known, right. But it wouldn't have the same vibrancy. Yes. The interesting thing about this all is And we'll get to the whole point of what the inauguration is kind of, you know, what it meant to the whole country, arguably the whole country on certain levels. But I, you know what I really loved is, A, the fact that you actually went down there. And pretty much what happened is you got there and you went out into like a press area and it was basically crickets, right?
Yeah, nothing. Nothing was going on. And this is the really only press area for people that couldn't get one of those lanyards that would get you to where El Roker is.
Yeah, where you were like covering it for everybody and doing
the
feed.
Right. Exactly. And I was in this area and the only public there were protesters, because it was the area that was deemed by, you know, DC local government, the Black Lives Matter protest area. So mm-hmm. that stayed in place, and there was only 6 or 7 Black Lives Matter protesters there, you know, sitting there, right. Which was interesting. But it was the closest area you could get. It was just off Lafayette Park, right next to St. John's Church, you know, the famous church where, sure. I know you as a presidential historian, you would have many more famous moments around it, but for me in the last 6 months, it's where Trump stood with the Bible upside down for that photo shoot during the during the riots, mm-hmm. or the Black Lives Matter riots. Anyway, it was right next to that, and you could see the roof of the White House. So it was a cool spot. You could see the Washington Monument, which always looks beautiful. And that the only other reporters there was like people from Argentina, maybe German television, and as media people, they all want the shot. They need something, and I'd see like even a young lady reporter from, you know, South Korea doing a report with her sole cameraman. It was kind of quite sad. I felt bad for them. At least my reporting is I've got to have a laugh.
Empty streets.
Yeah, and these people have flown in for that. I'm like, oh my goodness. But I enjoy talking about that. That is my style of reporting.
That is, because you're the guy that makes something out of the stuff that most people don't even. Everybody's there to get that shot and to look and see if they can see the president or see the motorcade or see the protesters or whatever it is. You're there for the sidebar, which I absolutely love. In fact, right now, I'm reading a book that you might or might not enjoy. I don't know how many people would. It was written in 1902, and it's called 36 Years at the White House. And it's the guy that was the doorkeeper at the White House starting in the last year of the Lincoln administration, right in, I think his last year there was 1903. And he wrote this book in 1902. And it's not very well written, but it's fascinating because it's all observational, like things about the family and little stuff like, oh, this woman came to visit the president and she was so overcome with excitement, she passed out and I had to pick her up, you know. And
he That's talks, fantastic.
And wackos that showed up at the door that he had to like say, I don't know if this is somebody I should let in. Because keep in mind, back in those days, the security was pretty lax. It was just this old guy that would stand there and go, I don't think he looks like the right guy. I should call somebody.
Yeah, I love that was written in 1902. So really in probably a few months' time, there will be book deals for the equivalent guy that worked at the Trump White House for 4 years.
And you would have had a ghostwriter who would have made it, zhuzhed it up a little bit.
Publishing hasn't changed. Yeah.
But what's great about it is it in many ways is the take of an individual like you who is an observer. And I love that. I think that's like one of the most fascinating things. And for you in particular, the reason I love hearing you talk about this stuff is because this clearly, by your accent and our knowledge of you, is not your home country. And so you're kind of this outsider looking in at the great American experiment, which actually, if you're being fair, Australia is also the great Australian experiment, separating from England. You said to me something that kind of caught my ear, and I thought it was really touching that, you know, you were this little boy growing up in the countryside of Australia, and you were fascinated with America and with the presidents. Yeah. So what did that feel like when you got there, and, you know, aside from all the weirdness of this particular inauguration, to be there at that moment, what did that feel like?
No, the feeling's incredible. Like, that, to take me back to that little kid that and still covering an inauguration, although I'm on the outside, but to be there in the center of that sort of history still gets me fired up. And I do have to pinch myself that, you know, I've had a few wins over my last 20 years in this job. As a friend of mine called me a rollicking radio reporter, which I thought I quite like the word rollicking in there.
Yeah, I do too.
and still, you still have to go, all right, this is fantastic that I'm at this place in history of a huge historical event, and the whole world was watching this on Wednesday. Sure. However, I'm still locked out and I'm still not there. But even that, to me, enhances my experience. I love being the locked out one. I think that's good. But overall, to be honest in what you said, that the feeling is, it's been since I've been in America, I've loved my every day of being here, and it's wonderful fun, and being in New York City is incredible. And of course, we've had the tough 10 months for the whole country. But my love of American politics has probably waned. And I used the other day the inauguration again to maybe reflect a bit on why I loved America previously and why I still love the pageantry of that transfer of power and a speech by a guy that we don't really know is how he's going to go, and you just hope he's going to go for the good of the rest of the world.
Right.
And they're the virtues that I loved growing up following the presidency, regardless of politics. And so my love has waned, you know, and that's a shame, you know, to myself. And Wednesday brought it back in the hope that there is hope.
Isn't that kind of like, I think, you know, in fairness to you and to us, I think that's what happens. It's kind of like growing up. You're really idealistic when you're young, and what you see is A, the pageantry, B, the history, and you see all of the beauty and hot button moments of the ideology of this American, as they call it, experiment. But when you dive into it, it's whether it's politics, marriage, a job, you begin to see all aspects. And I think it's natural that your enthusiasm would start to wane.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry about that. I think that honestly, that's kind of the reason these moments are so essential. I think they see the same thing in England. It's not like, you know, the Queen makes any decisions or anything for the country, but there is something that ties you to your history and to what this place is all about when you observe the pageantry of a moment like that. And I think that whether you like the guy or not, whether you believe in what went on during the election or not, we all needed a moment to breathe. And I think that it gave us that. Did you get that sense there?
Oh, massively. Yeah, for sure. And using the word pageantry, I guess that's a great way to hook people in. So the pageantry is designed to keep, you know, create a moment in time to hook the people in, and then they can start unraveling if they like the guy or not, or, you know, like the politics, or, you know, because I definitely love the day, and now comes, you know, and it's funny when you watch it, as much as the media are probably treating someone like Biden as a media darling,
right now,
you know, right now, but there's still some wolves came out on day one. And so, you know, the pageantry aside, we're now into the next stage of getting ahead as a nation. So yeah, it's interesting, but I like that the pageantry exists, and you know, and I, as I say, I love those speeches growing up. Like to go into that whole point, how it's waned is, like, I grew up idolizing John F. Kennedy. Like, and I would read thousands of books, tens of books, I should say, thousands have been written on him, but I've read probably
thousands of words.
Yeah, on him. And, you know, and I, I love deep diving on him as a teenager, as a, you know, when I went to university and reading about him. But now I look back on him and I'm like, he was a dirty dog, that guy. So, you know, morally, you're not the same.
They pretty much all, it's kind of fascinating if you take a real deep look at these presidents. They're neither as evil as the people that don't like them would portray them, nor are they as angelic as the people that love them would portray them. But they're, if you do study their inaugural addresses, it's really, you know, I'm a huge Lincoln fanatic and can pretty much quote some of his speeches word for word, parts certainly of his inaugural addresses. But then, you know, the other night, during the evening, the Celebrating America thing that was on all the networks.
Yep.
I thought one of the most interesting things is when they had individuals read parts of different inaugural addresses. And one of the ones that really stood out to me, because I didn't really remember for some reason any of Ronald Reagan's, either of his inaugural addresses, but the one that really stood out to me was the quote that this person read, in which he said, you know, we take this for granted. Every 4 years, there's going to be inauguration and somebody's going to do a speech and there's big dances and all of this kind of stuff. And he said, we take it for granted and we think it's normal, when in fact, it's an incredible miracle, and that we can transfer power in that sense. And when I heard that, and then a little later, I saw Katy Perry singing Firework and all the fireworks going on over the Lincoln Memorial and the Lincoln Reflecting Pool and the Washington Monument in the distance, I started to cry.
Oh, Patty, it's wonderful.
And yeah. I said, oh my God, I've needed this moment. And that is, and honestly, that's not saying anything against the last 4 years. All it's saying is that we needed a moment to just breathe and to celebrate the transfer of power and who we are as a nation and what all of this has meant. And we'll get down to deconstructing, I'm sure, as we always do, what comes next. But I think, you know, and I'm hoping that you felt the same way, especially as someone who loved it as a child and is a little more realistic as an adult.
I took my son's advice. I sat in my hotel room after I did a lot of my reports in the morning walking around town, and I watched the whole inauguration, and it was fantastic. You know, it was such a TV spectacle. I mean, I'll give the TV mainstream media credit there. They really knew how to package it.
And, they sure did.
And it looked, and whoever was, you know, call it the stage manager behind it, it was brilliant. Like, it was as good as a Super Bowl, you know, like, in terms of performing.
100%. Just the way they constructed it, and then at night, the three presidents that came in and chit-chatted. And I guess there's this group called the Presidential Inaugural Committee. But clearly, you know, it's the actual nitty-gritty producers and the people reaching back to get the sound and coming up with the ideas to have people read. Like, I thought that was, to me, that, because I love presidential history, to hear different snippets, you know, like the John Kennedy, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. Those moments, you know, we've all heard it, but it's so important at times like this to be reminded.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And how they, like, how did that meeting go? Let's say, you know, because the meeting probably happened the first week of, you know, just after the election, mid-November. They're all sitting around. How do they go, oh, we've got to get that young poet, you know, Amanda Gorman?
Gorman,
you know, yes. We've got to get her. Let's get her. And everyone goes, all right, I'll see if I can get her. I'll ring her agent. Like, I'm just, like, whoever came up with that spitballing idea is some kind of producing genius.
Yes.
It was like, and then the idea of where to slot her in proceedings to get, I mean, you're in the radio business, you know, and you're married to a famous program director, and then you work with Scott Shannon. Like, the DJing of this event was quite brilliant.
Yeah. It was. It was really, I mean, even and in the evening when you saw those shots on that Celebrating America special, and you saw, you know, you saw Bruce Springsteen performing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and then it kind of panned up the steps to Tom Hanks, who was who hosted, and over his shoulder you saw Lincoln lit inside the memorial in the back. background, and it was, I mean, it was visually stunning. It really was.
Amazing. And I, you know, on the performances, of course, Gaga's always fantastic, and you know, I loved her gesturing. She was gesturing really good. This girl sells a performance, you know, like as much as she can. And I thought, good for her.
Well, and that voice, and her voice.
Yeah, it's amazing. I always look at her and go, what a, like, isn't this girl used to sing for like 10 bucks a night at the Bitter End, you know, down on Bleecker Street. And now, I mean, you know, even that's a cool moment to me, although she could go to Wembley Stadium and perform to 100,000 people. Still, she's at an inauguration singing, you know, the anthem is amazing. And then that fast forward, you know, a couple of moments later to J-Lo coming.
J-Lo,
I was nervous for J-Lo. I'm like, oh,
I was too. How do you follow that performance from Gaga? Yeah.
How do you follow that? Then J-Lo comes down and she crushes it. I'm like, J-Lo, well done. Like, your singing, your voice teacher.
Yeah.
Really did a good job here.
Yeah, and I love the fact that she stopped and she did some of the Pledge of Allegiance in Spanish. You know,
she did that and then she went, let's get loud. You know, yes. I'm like, wow, J-Lo, you killed that as well.
So, she did. And it's funny because A-Rod was talking about it in the days before, and he said, no matter what she's ever done, she's more nervous about this event than any other performance she's ever done, because what matters to her is that people take it in the right spirit and that she added to a sense of hope. And you know, and I keep saying this, but I think we would be remiss not to recognize that there are a lot of people disappointed in the outcome of the election. But what you, I think, cannot be disappointed in is that it's America and we're moving forward, and however that plays out, it'll play out. But I think that it's essential that we don't struggle toward the destruction of something greater than the, just this moment in time. And, and I think that's kind of what she was even thinking, was that, you know, I want this moment to be bigger than just whose side is she on, but that we're all on, we're going to try to be on the same side and we'll have our disagreements. Yep. I mean, that was my...
No, it's great. I mean, that's the important thing to, you know, in light of what's gone on in the last month of, you know, the craziness at the Capitol and that, it's, it's important to underline that we're all in this together, but that's the hard part of any leader now, is to bring people together and how they do that. I mean...
Did your kids watch the inauguration?
Yes. So Harvey's doing virtual learning, remote learning, and they had that shared on his screen, so he watched it. And my girls, one didn't have it on in the classroom, and the other had it on in the classroom. So,
and they're, tell us how old they are.
It's 11, 8, and 7.
And the girls are 7 and 8.
Eight. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
they're little
Americans, and they know what's going on, and yeah, and they get it, and you know, they're not, and like, example is the Capitol, you know, events on Gen 6. They weren't disturbed by that. They sort of clocked it and understood, and there was issues, and so I always ask them. I said, are my kids going to be mentally harmed from all these times and the abundance of news that's entering their, let's call them feeds of how they get their media or whatever, as they're on TikTok. No, TikTok now is full of news, which is interesting. So, I think they're all right. I think they're stable. I guess we can't judge our children until they're in their 20s, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. My kids were very little during 9/11, and I worried about that terribly. Jake was in first grade, and then Kate was in preschool, and Will was not even 2 yet. But you know, they obviously, it was hard to miss, because that was pretty much all the coverage, and people were, you know, what the country was like in those days was unbelievable. And you do worry about that and the long-term impact, but, you know, again, I think it goes back to parenting and just kind of soothing them and telling them, you know, this is a part of politics. It was an unusual event, but not unheard of.
Right.
And certainly worldwide, not unheard of, but even in this country. So it's a learning experience, a teaching moment for you guys.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, both sides can get on with it now and, you know, govern and you know, let's see how the next 4 years pan out. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you still love us here in America?
Yeah. Oh, I do. Yes, for sure. And that was the crazy thing, like all the tech after the, do we call it an insurrection? Is that what we officially call January 6th events?
Well, I think there are people who call it an insurrection. I think there are people who called it a protest. I think there are people who called it a rally. I think there are people who called it a melee. I think, you know, to be fair, you can just call it an event. That's a really unexciting generic term.
But. Yeah, so that event, on January 6th, the events of January 6th is, you know, a lot of Australians are like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on over there? You know, and I'm like, this, and I had to underline to them that America is this beautiful beast, and it keeps on churning regardless of what's even happening up the top. Most people want their kids to be healthy, you know, put food on the table, get a good education, come home, watch Netflix, watch some football, watch some sport after your kids have played some sport. Like the machine keeps going. And I, you know, in my, the ups and downs of being locked down in COVID and not being able to go out into the world, but you got to see the evidence of commerce moving even during lockdown as small businesses were crumbling, but the roads, the traffic started picking up in June, July and August. Mm-hmm. And you're watching trucks moving. And, you know, we went for a drive to Ohio, you know, and the roads were packed. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. There's, you know, it was important to see that this country doesn't stop, you know.
And people were even coming up with new ideas for business ideas based on where we are now, which I found really fascinating.
So the people of the country, and I had to explain this to Australians, don't just go from the news watching, you know, people storm the Capitol and, you know, people, you know, presidents saying some crazy things or people in government doing, forget all that's just the mainstream media feeding you all this, you know. And Aussies love America in that regard, that they're watching this and you know, Trump, they would wake up to Trump every morning on television because he was so kind of intoxicating to watch. He was like incredible, you know?
A bit of a personality.
Yeah, like amazing. I love him or dislike him, he was very entertaining to watch. And that whole that they're being fed all that. And I'm like, no, things are good, you know. But I go, my daughter played a whole season of soccer and there's, you know, 30 families on the sidelines. And these are all good, not nice, normal people just trying to get ahead. You know, so anyway, it's hard to explain when you're getting fed one story in a different country about this amazing country. And,
We're even getting fed different stories in this country, so that's not unusual.
That's right, yeah. So full steam ahead, I say. I'm excited, you know. And that probably gets back to what you meant with the inauguration, that it is this, you know, line in the sand of the next 4 years. It's like, all right, let's go now. Let's get to work for everyone, you know. Let's go.
See what we can do next.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I was really, really proud of you. Shocked at first and then proud of you and grateful that you went down there to just kind of drink in that atmosphere. And I know that it was hard because it's hard enough when you don't have, you know, the full on press credentials, let alone when there are 25,000 National Guardsmen ready to like take you out if you try to get through any barriers.
it's funny because they have all these barriers set up and they'd let you through them. Uh-huh. Which I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then because of machine guns, I'm like, can I go through there? And they sort of grunt and nod their head. And I'm like, thanks, guys. But the barriers were set up in a way that you actually had to climb over them. So it was quite entertaining to watch like these, you know, journalists, other real life journalists, you know, in suits. And they're just trying to get their stand up shot, you know, stand in front of their cameraman and it's been a big day here in Washington, D.C., those. And they're having to, like, sort of do – one woman's wearing a nice skirt. And she had to do the splits over a concrete barrier. And I'm like, well, yeah, they're letting us in here, but it's like they're letting us in, but they really don't want you in there. It's like going to someone's party, but the couple that threw the party had a big argument beforehand and the wife said, I'm not laying out any condiments or food beforehand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like – yeah, so it was a very interesting atmosphere, but we did what we could do, Patty. So thank you for your kind words. And the biggest non-event event I've ever covered.
Was there any aha moment, any moment when you went, wow, that's cool? Yeah. Or was it mostly, wow, there's nothing happening?
There's nothing happening. Like, even, you know, and I've made a career out of interviewing crazy people on the streets.
Right.
There wasn't even any crazy.
Well, reason. Yeah, they made sure all the crazies were out in Maryland or Virginia.
Yeah. I found some woman singing on a street corner. I said, oh, this is a Brad Blake's interview with this woman. Yeah. I went up to her and did the interview. And she was the most polite, eloquent, you know, lovely, elderly woman. Yeah, singer. I'm like, and the whole time I'm interviewing, going, oh, this is just so not funny, this interview. I mean, I could, what's Scott Shannon going to say when I give him this interview? Yeah, so I didn't even afford. But anyway.
I had a similar experience years ago. I was working on the morning show at Z100 in New York, and I was really young and inexperienced, and Donald Trump, who we now know as the ex-president, was getting married to Marla Maples. And at the time, Trump owned the Plaza Hotel in New York. And they said to me, go in there and see what you can get. See if you can get it, you know, find them, talk to anybody, maybe a, you know, bridesmaid, whatever. And I actually got to stay at the hotel. So I thought, sure, great. I wandered the hallways with this little recording device.
Yeah.
Never saw anybody or anything go on. It was the most boring.
Yeah.
That happens.
That's great, Patty. You know, you're making me laugh because you said, what was my aha moment? And I'm like, oh, I'd love to give you an answer, but there were no aha moments.
Right, that was what happened to me. The aha moment was that there was no aha.
No, and that was the aha.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. That's kind of funny, though.
Yeah, it is. That's why I have no, and I'm glad I did it, and it's a story I'll be able to tell, you know, in 20 years' time. I remember that time you covered that event, right? Yeah, it was very weird, but it was great, and people wanted to hear about it. So
yeah.
That was good. It was good fun.
Great. Well, thank you so, so much. I love that you did that. I love that you do everything you do. You're wonderful. And thank you.
Well, thank you. And I will drink with you in February.
I hope so. You better.
Bye.
Bye.
True North Stores beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you are craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.